Morning, Randy.
Good morning, William.
How are you today?
I am doing pretty well.
Peachy?
Yeah, doing peachy.
Peachy King?
Yeah.
It's been a... You had some, you know, exciting things happen, right? You had to go... You went down to see your parents?
Yeah, I went and saw my folks last week. We mentioned that, I think we recorded. Have we recorded since then?
No, maybe not. You had to go last week.
I went and visited my folks last week. My dad continues to have issues. He's in the hospital today for something that's not ostensibly life-threatening, but it's just comforting. So we're still working on that. And it was nice to see my folks otherwise. I also got to see my sister. She was down there for a while. And I got a couple of San Diego-style burritos. I think we've talked about this, but...
Yeah, the one place that you always like to go to.
Well, I didn't get on the one place. I just went to another place. But San Diego-style burritos are the ones where it's just carne asada, pico de gallo, and guacamole.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah. There's no beans, simple. No rice, no sour cream.
You know, it's funny because right now I was talking to someone and so we're talking to one of my clients. I'm like, I haven't been eating out a lot lately. I've been trying to eat at home.
Yeah.
Which
we talked about why.
Yeah, I mean, everything's so expensive, but I thought like that was kind of a universal thing, but their restaurants are still pretty booked. Like they look like there's a lot of people in them. And I'm like, I know so many people like you and me. They're like, oh, I'm cooking at home. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. And like, so anecdotal evidence, I don't know if it's pouring over or what, but man, oh man. But I haven't
read articles about restaurants not doing business. I haven't read those articles yet. Maybe they're coming. I don't know. The problem is we've built our economy around two incomes, which means that to eat at home, like it's kind of like doesn't really pencil, man. People are both getting home at 5 and they're hungry.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's still a lot of that kind of thing.
Yeah, so. I can see that. So the point of this is that I'm cooking at home and I've gotten to this point where I make these burritos for the kids or for my father-in-law for breakfast, and I've gotten pretty good at it, like what to add, and I've got some different variations. My son though, if I vary too many times, like one time instead of putting like hash browns in it, I put sweet potato hash browns in it. Yeah, he didn't go for that.
Yeah, people, you don't want to be surprised what's in your hash browns.
No, he didn't like
so
that at all.
So my son this week is at the Student Television Network annual convention, which used to be at a different location every year. So a few years back, it was scheduled to be in Washington, D.C. Before that, it was in Atlanta.
Oh, is these people from all over the country?
It's all over the country.
Oh, I don't know.
But then during COVID, they canceled it, and then they had it in Long Beach. And then they're having it in Long Beach again. So my son is in Long Beach at the National Convention for Student Television Network. And he's having the time of his life, making short films. And it's a competition, but really it's a convention.
Right.
With a competitive layer. And he sent the first thing that he made last night. And it's artistically beautiful. It's like the shot composition and the acting and the costume directing and all that kind of stuff. It looks really good, but it's like, it's fiercely weird. And it's because
fiercely weird.
It's because we introduced our son. I mean, we introduced him a long time ago to the films of Wes Anderson. I don't know if you know Wes Anderson, but he
off the top of my head.
He is an art house comedian. So like he makes art house movies, but they're accessible in the sense that they're often funny, and they're usually quirky, and they're usually lighthearted. Even if they have some like serious undertones, that's their jam. Anyway, so he fell in love with a recent art house comedy from this guy called Asteroid City, and that movie is it's so funny because this has kind of been the story of Wes Anderson for a while. So I think he has some genuine masterpieces. He has a kid's movie called Fantastic Mr. Fox, which he directed, which is amazing. He has this beautiful Pirates of Penzance modernization called Moonrise Kingdom, which is great. But his movies have gotten increasingly odd. And
because he can.
Well, he makes them for super low budget. So like the best actors in Hollywood go work in these movies for scale. So you'll have like Ed Norton actually was on a TikTok bragging about how he does commercials.
That Asteroid City has Scarlett Johansson and Tom Hanks in it.
So I'm telling you, like the biggest actress, and they did it for nothing. They did it for like $3,000, and because they love this guy's quirky stuff. But anyway, his shows have gotten increasingly quirky and less cohesive. So like, you know, as he's gotten more successful, he's relied less on his like the editors and people, and so. So that's the, kind of the story of Asteroid City, which is like scene by scene, the show is super interesting. But as a whole, it doesn't make any sense. And it's not cohesive at all.
Each shot is a masterpiece, but each masterpiece doesn't fit together.
That's right. Right. It's like, yeah, I mean, you can do that with any kind of movie. And people often do where like, wow, that scene was amazing. Like, was the movie good? Like, not really. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the story of Asteroid City. Anyway, so Max just made a Wes Anderson movie where he's just doing Wes Anderson swish pans and two shots and super bright colors and framing. So the character's in the lower left corner, but there's something interesting happening in the upper right corner. And just interesting.
That's super cool, though, that he's like at that level. He can kind of be that artistic.
Yeah, no, it is. So like I admired him. Hat tip. Thumbs up. Anyway, so I just got last night when we were drifting off to sleep, we got his edit for his first movie we watched. We're like, what the crap was that? But also, we were like, that's a cool shot. Like every shot.
Masterpiece of shots that don't have anything to do with each other. Yeah. Oh, that's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
He actually edited something I watched the other day. He played for me a song that I was like, that is just lame. Super lame song. And then he cut it with something else, and I was watching. I'm like, well, that was really cool.
Yeah, I made a music video out of it.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's cool. But then I kept thinking about, like, wait, I don't understand, like, why the song itself is I can't listen to. But with the thing, it was really cool. And then I realized he added a beat to the song with his shutter clicks.
Did he?
Yeah. Like when you're watching it, it's dun 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 dun, and I'm like, oh, that made the song interesting because he put these
interesting. You didn't like the three-four timing? You made it to 4-4 or something?
I don't know. I liked it. But that's fun. Anyways, fun stuff. Yeah, he's a talented kid.
Fun stuff. So he's having the time of his life, having a little senior send-off thing, because he's down there with all of his movie making friends, and you know, it's the latter half of his senior year. At a convention. Oh, and the hotel that they were supposed to be in got booked up. So they moved him to a nearby hotel, which is the Queen.
Wait, hold on. You got to explain. Well, he was very upset about it.
He was very upset because he's there's a competition. He's trying to win the competition. And to win the competition, you need to have close access to resources and everything else. So he's like, they moved me to a boat. And he's in Long Beach. So that can mean a lot of things. And I'm like, that's a little weird. And I'm like, hey, I'm sorry, son. He's like, yeah, I'm really mad.
He moved me to a boat.
And I'm like, and we talked about it for a while, and I was just trying to console him for the sadness of the boat. And I'm like, finally, like, wait, what boat? And he goes, it says in here on the paper, Queen Mary. I'm like, wait a minute. You're a senior year of high school. You're going with all of your friends, and you're going to stay on the Queen Mary, and you're mad about it? I'm like, maybe you should sit down. Maybe you should just take a breath. And sure enough, he's been sending us all these crazy pictures from inside the Queen Mary with all of his friends.
If anything, it should help him.
I know.
Because it's got all those quirky things.
Yeah, you can legit make a Wes Anderson send-up on the Queen Mary. You could just legit do it.
You sent me a photo of him with one of his friends walking in front of it, and I'm like, dude, even that was
Yeah,
funny.
They had like an Ocean's 11-style shot where they're wearing suits, walking in front of the Queen Mary, like buttoning their coats. That was pretty funny.
That's pretty funny stuff.
So they're having a good time.
He's a crack up. That's my other son's birthday today.
Oh yeah,
Fierston's birthday today.
That's great.
Big, he's turning into a teenager today. 13.
Dang, son.
I know. It's my last kid too. It's weird. Oof. And I have all my kids at home for spring break, which has been fun.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Do you have a mission call coming up?
It hasn't come. So hopefully Tuesday. So you know the hack thing where you look up their email? So if you don't know, what happens is you go through a lengthy process.
Online process.
Online process, right? You have to do doctor's appointments. You have to do two interviews.
You're wondering, they don't want to send a bunch of missionaries to Africa and have them like get like a dread disease that they could have diagnosed before they left.
Yes. Well, that's one of it. And the other is like, obviously, are you cut out for this? Are you worthy of this?
Are you healthy? You know, so healthy enough to send away.
It's not an easy application process.
Yeah.
So And then what happens is you send your application to church headquarters.
Yeah.
At church headquarters, there's a department that gets it. They look over it, make sure everything is filled out properly. Once that's done, then they send it off to one of our apostles, who will then assign you, which we believe by revelation, to a place that you're supposed to go.
Yeah, they'll have a list of places that need people and a list of people that want to go, and then they pray about it and they start picking.
So then after the process inside there, after they do that up in Salt Lake, then the apostles will send it back to the mission department for assignment. And what will that, I mean, they've had assignment, but for, you know, they fill in all the requisite forms, and then they're going to send those forms to the new missionary on Tuesday at 10 a.m. Utah time.
Or
9 a.m. Utah time.
9 a.m. Utah time?
I think it is, yeah. That explains it. I think the kids get them at 8 a.m.
Because everyone was telling me 10 a.m. and we got it at 8 or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think it's 9 a.m. and we get them at 8. Well, anyway, they all go out.
Point being, one of the hacks that William's circling around something. There's a hack, which is when some of the online activity starts to happen on the kids' account, namely when they actually create their missionary email address and it works, then you know that things are afoot.
It's coming Tuesday.
And it's coming that Tuesday. Yeah. So
her email is active. We should get it on Tuesday.
All right.
Now
are you
going
to do a thing?
We're not sure how, because she's here right now.
Yeah, but she can be here on Tuesday?
We don't know.
I see. Cool. Well, let us know. We'd love to come.
Yes. We would love,
if you're having people.
If not, we'll have a Zoom, and I'll send you the little Zoom.
Sounds good. All right.
So, yeah, exciting.
Exciting times. Yes. So you got your kids all home for spring break.
Yes.
What are you guys doing?
I haven't got to spend a lot of time with them. I went to Disneyland for an evening on Monday with them.
Okay.
That was fun.
Oh, you have passes or something? Why would you go
for
an
evening? About to expire.
Oh, cool.
So
nice.
And so it's like one last hurrah. That was fun. It's fun to have passes, actually. I think you know, because when you're an employee, you
have to
go.
Going for an evening is nice, but going for the whole, like, we're going to be here for 18 hours.
Yeah, rope drop to the last ride.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a little bit, I don't know if I'm just getting old.
It's a heavy lift.
Yeah. But I also like just kind of sitting in Disneyland and watching people. I think it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
So it was fun. I always complain about Disneyland after I leave. The app is still terrible, but
yes, you have been complaining about Disneyland for a while now.
I haven't done it in a while, but I think I realized what happened. They lost so many of the legacy employees during COVID, and they didn't. A lot of those guys didn't come back. So a lot of like that legacy stuff that was passed down from generation to generation as Disneyland, like as what it meant to be a cast member, not an employee.
Yeah.
How you help people have a great experience and stuff like that. There's just, back then there was a lot. I used to think it was generational.
There were deep, deep cuts to Disneyland though.
Yeah. And those deep cuts
eventually cut bone, sounds like.
Yeah. So that's normal. Okay. So when you do as a corporation, you go after the more expensive employee to cut. And the more expensive employee is someone that's been there for 20 years. And so it doesn't sound great, but it is part of business, right? You got to do it. And so I think they might have cut too much of that middle group out. And so the new group doesn't know how to be a cast member versus an employee.
Okay.
So they don't smile. They're not excited. I'm always trying to get them to smile. Like, that's my new thing. When if they're coming off the ride, you know, and they're like, "Can't be right, blah, blah," you know, and I'm like, "Thanks, that's awesome. You're awesome." Their name, cast member name, there, and I'm like, "Judy, that was great." So then they smile. So that's my thing now. So I'm not so worried about them anymore. I'm gonna try to make them happy. So
I love it.
I'm
there
flipping the script. Instead of them trying to cast members make me feel.
I keep having this feeling lately that certain things are going back to regular, and I think it's probably without evidence. A lot of people are like, "Oh no, we're still in a doom spiral," and I'm like, "I don't know. I feel like in many ways, maybe because some of these court cases are drifting away and the nominations are starting to lock up, but I feel like the presidential election's kind of getting back to regular. Where if we get an interest rate tax cut, the incumbent is got a good shot, and if we don't, then the challenger's got a good shot. Like, so I feel like things are. I just feel
back
like
to normal phases.
Back to regular, old timey stuff.
You did say old timey.
And one of the things that we got back to regular is a couple weeks ago they had an earnings call with Disney. I think we talked about it on this pod where, like, I feel like Bob Iger started to do some of his Bob Iger magic, and like I think Disney's going to get back to regular, but I don't really know. We'll see.
Well, a lot of the stuff I think that we get frustrated with, it seems to have been shown the light of day, and the cockroaches are scurrying.
I feel like cockroaches are scurrying, and it makes me happy. I don't know.
Yeah, I like it.
We'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take it. Like all these education places are like, okay, we're not going to do DEI anymore because evidently Harvard didn't work out that great for Harvard. So
there's my youngest son is entering the grouchy teenage years.
Yeah, that's
like
where...
he's hearing us say that. So I don't know if he feels like he has a license to experiment with grouchiness or if he's actually grouchy. But this morning he was just all up in my face. It was so funny though, because when the rest of the house isn't cast, because the rest of the house is empty now, it's just easier to have your kid bark at you. So he was barking at us this morning. We were laughing.
Yeah, it's funny because I looked at my youngest, my youngest sibling, and I'm like, so easy for them because I'm the oldest.
Right.
And then like now that I'm a parent, I'm like, yeah, it is easier for the youngest, but I think it's more about my evolution than his evolution. My evolution has been, well, I probably did a whole lot of stuff to those older kids that probably weren't as necessary as I would see them as now. Right. I think I've the essence, I've gotten the essence of parenting a little bit better than I did when I first started.
Okay. Look, so you're saying you're a better parent. You might be right. The truth is you just tolerate more crap. And there's a way that can ruin a child if you go too far, but there is give a kid enough room to breathe. And that actually goes good. Like it goes better when you give kid, even if they're being like this morning, I didn't menace him. Like I would have, like Steve, a couple years ago, I'd have been like, you don't talk to me that way. I don't care if you're tired. You know what I mean? But this morning I'm just like, ha ha ha, he's being funny. And it's okay. Cause then by the end of our little ride to school, he was being nice and he's going to, he's going to remember that we were nice to each other.
Yeah, and you also remember that they do fluctuate. You know, they go from that. Sometimes, did you have any kids that didn't really fluctuate?
Fluctuate.
My oldest never did.
Never had a dark time?
Not really.
No, all our kids had a dark time.
No, my oldest was always nice.
Yeah, we thought we might not get one with... And actually, I feel like Max's dark time was a little shorter. But our youngest, he's just running right into it. So,
oh, the fun of it all.
Oh, the good times.
Starship!
Hey, yesterday there was the third launch of Starship.
Now,
I'm going to do a quick summary because I don't want to languish on this.
Okay,
Starship number one took off and almost separated and then exploded. Starship 2 took off, separated, went for a while, and then exploded. Starship number 3 went yesterday. William, how did it go?
It went great.
Yes. It did go great. Let's hear it.
Well, first of all, they added some like coverage that it was unbelievable. There was one where there looked like a high altitude or a higher altitude.
Video coverage. You could watch it.
There was like a higher altitude drone shot where it was like going through the cloud cover. Did you see that? Like it's coming past the drone and watching it go up. That was cool.
And then they had
some really high quality cameras on the actual...
On the spaceship.
They even have it in... Did you see the one where they had it inside when they opened up they called the Pez dispenser?
Yeah.
They opened it, and so there was a camera on the inside of the cargo bay watching it open.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, that is so cool. And then on the way back, which you normally only see in animated things, right? We really have not had good coverage, what they call the plasma screen that covers the atmosphere.
So that's when you've seen it on movies. And like whenever the craft comes back into the atmosphere, that everything gets red and go like lights on fire, basically.
Right.
And it's because... It's the friction of the air against the spacecraft because the aircraft is traveling at 20,000 miles an hour or something.
Right.
And that friction, it's basically skidding to a stop when it hits air.
Right.
And that skidding to a stop turns everything fiery red.
Right.
And we've seen it depicted in 3D effects.
But never live.
I don't know if we've ever seen it live before.
And I just found out why. If you look at the Starship, one half of it is not tiled and the other one is tiled. And this is the first time I knew why. I just thought it was like, they're prototypes, they're going to blow up, so they're not going to tile the whole thing. No. The ship is so big that the plasma shield can't wrap its way around to the backside of the ship.
so they don't have to protect the back from heat.
Yeah, so like right now when the capsules come down.
But that makes sense. Like the bottom of the space shuttle was tiled, but the top wasn't, right?
No, it was all tiled.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, no, the tops were tiled, but the black ones on the thing on the bottom were bigger.
Oh, okay.
They were just it was tiled. The whole thing was tiled.
Oh, okay.
But they just had different tiles. The ones on the bottom did. They have to do 2,600 degrees.
Yeah.
It's a significant
super hot.
Amount.
Super hot.
So this plasma shield, and you literally they have a video of the ship going through the plasma field and just heating up and like just gets so hot, and then you lose coverage and evidently it melted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So the mission was launch the Starship. Starship goes into orbit.
Right.
And then the bottom like returns to Earth and splashes down in the water.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that it did. Right. That returned to Earth and splashed down in the water. Right.
No. It burned up on entry.
Both did.
Yep.
Both of them.
Well, the other one kind of like they had. I think that they executed the self-destruct. The booster came down. And then it looks like the grid fins weren't working at one point. Did you see it was going back and forth on this? So it's coming. So the booster's really fascinating. And then my favorite shot, by the way.
Yeah, so here's how it's going to work when it works. When it works, the rocket's going to push the Starship into space. Then the rocket's going to land.
But the rocket turns around and boosts its way back into Earth.
Okay. And it's going to land. And then the idea is it's going to come to a landing pad and then land.
Correct.
Well, and then the rocket, then the Starship's going to go around the Earth as long as it needs to. And then when it comes down, it's going to fall to Earth and then flip over and land.
Right.
And then both parts are reusable. And that's what makes the rocket cheap.
Correct.
Because it doesn't all just burn up.
Correct. And so in this case, the one thing that they wanted to do is they wanted to, get into kind of this orbit velocity and then coast for a while and then relight. And so they had a couple of tests.
That.
Yeah. So they hit their objectives. The bonus objectives were, can we make it back into, and do soft landings on the water? And that's what they were going to try to do. But those were not the main objectives. The main objectives were there was a transfer of propellant from one side of the ship to the other, the relight of the engines in space, and then the opening of the PEZ dispenser. Those were the ones they wanted to accomplish.
And they did them.
Yep.
So they did all the things they were supposed to do. And then as the one thing re-entered, you watched it like start to glow red, and it went for a long, long time, and then apparently it burned up.
Yep.
And then the other thing I thought made it back in, but apparently it didn't. So look, they're like, 60% of the way there now? Something like that?
Yeah.
Now they have to get it to where those things don't burn up, and then they can land them, and boom.
Yeah, and they're still on version 1 of the rocket.
Yeah,
there's
it's pretty
version
cool.
3 is already in design, and version 2 is in production.
Now, as a reminder, the only reason that this matters is that 10 years from now, this might actually be the most significant scientific innovation of our time. Because
amazing.
You're like, no, we've had rockets forever. We've even had good rockets forever. Yeah, yeah, yeah. This rocket, it can ship a payload so big that it can make it so that we can meaningfully put a colony on the moon or go to Mars soon.
Or have a deep space station.
Right? So, like, all those things are possible because this thing can ship so much stuff. So instead of having to think of how do you make an ultralight space, like a car that drive on the surface of the moon, you can just send a car to the moon.
Yeah.
Like an electric car.
Yeah. I'm actually... he's gonna send a Cybertruck to moon.
Oh, my gosh.
What he awesome.
He's totally going to do that, isn't he?
He's got it.
Oh, that'd be so amazing.
He's already got his... He has his Roadster.
Because that's
there
an electric
somewhere.
Car. There's no combustion necessary. No. All you need is electricity. That's hilarious. That'd be so funny. All right.
Well, dude, speaking of which, we were at a baseball game. My son was playing a baseball game, and we're all going along, and it's dark, okay? So it's like, I'm about 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
And all the kids stopped playing, and they're like, dude, that's a Cybertruck. Was coming down the hill into the parking lot where
just
we're
the
at.
Car. Just
the kids all froze.
They're like, "What's going
on?" I'm like, "Guys, we're playing
on?
A game, dude. Get into the game." They're
yeah,
like,
I got
a
text
the
other day. I got a text the other day from my son who's like, "Hey, Cybertruck, I saw one." Yeah, they're interesting, man. They're really interesting.
They're definitely better in person than they are on.
Yeah, they're just striking.
They're striking, and that is good for you. Fun stuff. Anyway, the Starship, man, I just eat this stuff up. And now what happens over the next, 3 weeks, it's just constant speculation of what what they learned, what they're improving, what's the next iteration, da da da. I did, you know, he's announced that the next iteration of this is going to be taller and bigger.
Of Starship?
Yeah, this is version one of the Starship. Like the ones they're testing are version one. Version two is already announced and it's bigger. And then he has a version three, which is even bigger.
That's fun.
So yeah, it's
And this is so far ahead of any other government in the world. It's wonderful.
And it's way cheaper, even though he's blowing up rockets.
Yeah.
Because good times. Anyway, we've talked about that before. But it's fun stuff, man.
All right, speaking of fun stuff.
I nerded out on that yesterday.
I went and saw Dune 2. Did we talk about Dune 2? Oh, I think we did.
We did. Yeah.
It's nerdier than the other ones.
Yeah, nerdier than the other
ones. But also super good.
Visually stunning. I haven't watched it yet. I want to. But my kids have been in town, so I...
Okay. Good news number three.
Woo.
There was a show in the 80s that I used to watch after school about a stuntman who used to be a private investigator on the side. He teamed up with a super, super hot Farrah Fawcett. And they ended up marrying each other or something like that. Anyway, it's called The Fall Guy.
Oh, I remember that.
You remember The Fall Guy?
Yeah. Is it coming back?
Well, it's coming back starring Ryan Gosling.
Oh,
and the trailer looks like cheesy fun. And then the first round of reviews have come in. Now, the first round is always the seed round. It's always that we think that these people will be kinder to us than other people. So I acknowledge that it's the seed round. But the seed round reviews are all like, it's crazy fun. They're like, the wheels fall off a little bit, but it's super funny. And the chemistry between Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt is amazing. And it's like a return to big movies for no good reason. And that's coming out in May.
And Lee Majors is in it. Wasn't he the original Fall Guy?
Well, yeah. Is he have a bit part or something? I don't know.
They just said the cast. And Hannah Waddingham. The lady from...
From Ted Lasso.
And Jason Statham.
Yeah. So anyway, you can watch the trailer online. But what's funny is because it's about a stuntman, then there's a bunch of inside baseball jokes about making movies. So the most recent trailer is the cast in character talking about the movie that they're making, but they cut it to make it sound as if they're talking about the movie Fall Guy. And it's really clever marketing. It's really funny.
That's cool.
And anyway.
When's it come out?
May, first weekend of May. But crucially, the reason I'm so excited is we've entered the Ryan Gosling is selling out phase, and I'm here for it because he's really funny.
He is funny.
If he wants to do commercial fare and less art films, man, count me in, man. Like, I want to watch every one of those because he's hilarious.
He is funny.
So like he did a bit at the Oscars where he sang the Ken song and he killed it, man. He's so funny. And he sang it live. He has a legitimately serviceable voice.
Really?
And his stage presence was off the charts.
Yeah, he's a ham.
He's a ham.
Who's Emily... Ryan Gosling. There's another guy that's like him. He does Deadpool. What's that guy's name?
Oh, Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds. Oh, they're both Ryan Reynolds.
Ryan Reynolds, super funny. But after a while, he's a little much. Like his bit is so big that you don't get to hang out with nuance much. He's just like punch you in the face.
Yeah.
Which again, I admire, and I don't spite him in success. But I don't want to watch five Ryan Reynolds movies in a row. I can watch five Ryan Gosling movies in a row, though. Like he's just good because he does nuance and he does. Oh, it's great.
Who's he married to?
He is married to. Come on. The super smoking hot Latina lady.
Oh, Eva Mendez?
Eva Mendez.
Is she really?
Yeah. And I don't think they're technically married, but they have two kids together and they call each other's man and woman. And he's super loyal to her. And
I did not know he was.
He's with Eva Mendez.
Huh.
And here's a twist. And this is just straight celebrity gossip at this point, but I didn't know it. So he's 43 years old. She's 50.
He looks like he's 12.
She's 50.
What?
He's into older women, man. I'm telling you.
Hey, go for it.
Because Rachel McAdams is older. And I think he was rumored to be with Sandra Bullock, who's way older. So, yeah.
Dude, he was in Remember the Titans? I didn't know that. I don't remember where he was in Remember the Titans.
Yeah, he was prominent. I think he was the quarterback? No, that was a different guy.
That was a different guy.
Well, anyway.
I hope they make another Gray Man. I love that series. I've read all those books.
Is that based on books?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, sounds exciting to me.
Yeah. So, well, just look. I mean, like, I've been begging. Like, I just want light fare that is meant to entertain, and I don't want to be challenged, and I don't want to be menaced. And we learned that when you do that, i.e., Top Gun. Guess what?
People go and watch.
People go and watch it, and we'll watch it over and over and over. I watched that show again the other day, and I liked it just as much.
Did you hear he was offered $35 million for that, and they said no, it's too much. So they ended up paying him something like $1 million with 10% on the royalties.
Who?
And so he made $100 million.
Tom Cruise? Yes. Yeah.
Dude, come on.
That's really fun.
That's awesome. Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you, Tom.
No, he's actually known to be a person that takes home crazy paychecks. All right. So that's coming up. So entertainment with that doesn't challenge me, that just is there to entertain. Yeah. We did it.
I saw a video of a guy that got married with Apple Visions on. And his wife was just looking at him like, he's so stupid. I don't know why I laughed so hard when I saw it. I'm like, are you serious right now?
Are you serious right now?
These people are wearing... I saw someone taking Apple Vision goggles skiing for real goggles.
Yeah.
That seems dangerous to me.
Yeah, that is dangerous. I mean, they solved the latency problem, so it's not that dangerous, I guess. But anyway, yeah.
Well, you met someone the other day that agrees with you. He thinks this is not the answer.
Well,
what other tech news is happening? There's nothing really.
What other tech news is happening?
Yeah, I want to know what's going on in tech.
That's a great question.
Well, we looked. I mean, like, where do we look? In Gadget?
I'm more in Gadget or Gizmodo. Gizmodo is lamer, but also has pretty good tech.
Yeah, they're a little bit more political.
Yeah.
Google.
Oh, they're trying to ban TikTok.
Oh, I know what weird was.
I have mixed feelings about it, because on the one hand, I'm like, I think we should highly regulate how much social media kids are allowed to consume. But I definitely think that we should not allow a state-run social network to be in America. So I'm in favor of that. But I'm also leery about getting excited about giving the government, after all of our talks about censorship, giving the government more censorship tools.
Well, they're not really trying to do that. I thought they were trying to force a sale.
Yeah, that's right. So in my view, that doesn't solve the problem then, right?
I don't think it solves the problem either. What if they sell it to an investor? I mean, ostensibly the data in the back door could still go to China and they would never know about it.
Well, that's already happened. They already said that Oracle operates their data and it's not going to mainland China, and that's already been disproved. So that's already happened. So now it's like...
Wait, so it's really not a China thing? I thought it was.
No. It is. They already made them do a half measure, where Oracle, the domestic U.S. company Oracle, is in the middle of the data and not sending it to China. They already did that. But then there's been defectors and spies that have been saying, no, man, that data is going to China for sure. And so now we're saying, okay, you got to sell it.
Well, I think the data is going to China. Do you agree with that? I mean, I don't know why I just believe that. I think it is. Like
100%.
The question is, what are they doing with it? I mean, I guess they could figure out how to infiltrate our children. Yeah, sure.
100%. I think they're already manipulating algorithms to F with us. I believe that, actually.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, they're for sure doing it to steer politics. I'm positive. If I was China, would I be trying to get people all spun up and favoring supporting Hamas? You bet I would. And I think they're doing it.
Oh, interesting.
I think they're doing it. Now that you're like, you're paranoid. I'm like, yeah.
Well, that's because you can see the back end of your game.
Yeah. I know what data they're seeing.
Dude,
because they could do all that and not get caught. That's the reason. Like, they could screw with us and just see how far it'll get and not get caught. And that's why I think that they're doing it. So I don't know. I don't know if we want to talk more about TikTok. That's kind of a heavy one. So one of the ones that's really that I'm excited about, this is a genuinely, I cannot believe it's taken us 30 years to do this. But a lot of regional states are passing prove that you're an adult law for accessing pornography on the internet.
Oh, I like that.
A lot of states are doing it. And Pornhub, one of the major porn outlets, is fighting back. They're like, oh, if that's what you're going to pass, then we're going to turn off Pornhub in your state. So Pornhub's turned off in like three states right now. It's turned off in Texas, I think Kentucky, and I think Utah. They turn it off in a few places. And they say,
how does that help them?
Well, they say that they're doing it because they currently aren't they aren't ready to be compliant. They don't have a validation mechanism. So they're doing it just to comply with the law. But they're also doing it. They're like putting up a big page that's like, you don't get this because Congress is screwing with your right to have pornography. And they're doing it to try and steer their customers.
They think that customers are willing to call their congressman and say, I want my porn?
Well, I don't know. I've told you all the facts I know about this because I don't want to go deep on internet pornography, but I do want to say this, and I cannot emphasize this enough. I can understand a case for free speech as it relates to pornography, like free access to pornography in the internet. I can understand the case for it. I truly can. But you cannot convince me that that there's no case for validation that you're an adult to access such content. That should exist. Period.
Agreed.
The fact that, but here's what I don't get. Why has it taken state governments this long? Like after a generations of people are just completely like children have been accessing this stuff in school libraries to say that, oh, you know, what we could do is we could make sure that they're adults. Like, come on.
That's actually a really good point. Like I hadn't thought about
but
that.
But even states that we trust, Idaho, Arizona, Utah, like people that could have figured this out day one. There's porn. Whoa, are they adults? Like that's day one. Like why has it taken this long? Anyway, so I'm excited. I hope those laws hold up to scrutiny and to legality. And I hope that if you want your porn, you can prove you're an adult. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
I'm with you. That's very interesting. Okay, so you sent me that. I want to talk a little bit about that one clip you sent me of the tech guy that was talking about Stanford students.
Oh,
remember
yeah.
That one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so who is that guy?
Oh, that's the CEO of NVIDIA, which is the recent hotness AI company. So they're a chip manufacturer that used to make video cards. Then they started getting a lot of heat because they were making cards that were used to mine crypto. And then crypto crashed and they're like, this company's ruined. And then like a year later, the AI models like started to do well.
Right.
And this company has not just the only chipset that's solid for this, but they have also a framework and a software system. They have everything in place to crush AI. So they went from being I'm not sure about this company to being a $2 trillion company. They've risen like 400% over the last 2 years.
So he had
super duper rich.
Yeah.
And he's
so
he had a really interesting
take on things. And his message was, I hope you have hard times. And I'm like, okay, yep. That's a weird thing to say. And basically, in his little video clip that you sent me, he talks about how he meets with Stanford students and that they have really, really high expectations. And he even validates the idea that they can have high expectations because they went to a very competitive school in a competitive environment with other really, really smart people. And so that they come out and that these expectations that they have are the things that are actually sinking them.
Yeah, because they have high expectations, which means they have low tolerance for suffering. And low tolerance for suffering, like, and to achieve things is to encounter suffering and overcome it. And he's like, currently you guys encounter suffering and you just change jobs or you go to a different place. And he's like, that's not useful. And he's like, I wish for you suffering. He's like, but not for the reasons you think. I wish for you suffering so that you can become successful as you should be able to be.
Because he kind of said, like, look, the single biggest thing that I have is resilience because I came from suffering.
Yeah. And he's like, I worked at McDonald's when I was a kid. And he's like, I've cleaned more toilets than everybody in this room for sure.
Yeah.
And he's like now one of the richest men in America because he built this company. But he also says some stuff that I don't know if you'll love. because he's been saying stuff lately. Because he's like, look,
he's a thing now.
He did really good things for this company when it was really hard, and then put himself in a position where, basically, I read this book about how companies go from good to great and how you have to choose it. And one of the things was, it wasn't that luck doesn't figure in. It's that you have to maximize luck. It's like you can be lucky and you can be unlucky. If you're good, you're going to minimize the impact of unluck and you're going to maximize the impact of luck. Well, they got lucky. Large language models, AI, generative AI,
right,
got really interesting overnight, and they were in the right position to do it, and they have maximized it. They right. have maximized it. Anyway, so one of the things that this guy says that was really funny was they're like, what would you tell people that want to do the same thing that you did? Like, would you... I don't remember the tee-off question, but his answer was, I absolutely would not do this again. He's like, it is so much harder and so much more heartbreaking and so much more painful than you can even imagine to achieve this level of success. He's like, I would have just worked for a company, got paid a lot of money, and done something way easier.
Well, I mean, Elon Musk in a lot of ways has said a lot of stuff like
well,
that.
Well, and Elon Musk is like, look, he should be being celebrated right now, but he's not. He's being attacked on every side. Because when you get to be a certain size, everyone just wants to bring you down. And that's what this guy's dealing with. He's like, yeah, I would not do this again. Like, he's not messing around. He's not kidding either. He's not like, I'm folksy. No. He's like, you're going to see, like the resentment in his eyes for how hard he's had to work to make this company successful.
Right. So you said that he said some things you didn't know that I would like.
That's one of them. Would you do this again? He's like, no, I would not. Like,
I look at a lot of things, you know.
I think the question was, what would you do differently if you had to do it again? He's like, I wouldn't do it. Wow. That's what he said.
What's his name?
Let me go find out.
Did he go to Stanford?
I think probably. Jensen Huang.
Is that how you say his name? Huang or Hong?
H-U-A-N-G. I would pronounce it Huang.
It's Oregon State and Stanford. And Aloha High School.
Yeah. An interesting factoid about Jensen Huang is that his cousin... So the main competitor in NVIDIA... Well, one of the main competitors in NVIDIA is AMD... And his cousin is a woman who is the CEO of AMD.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yep, wild.
Net worth is $79.9 billion.
But again, that's cool. But like a year ago, it was like $1 billion. Do you know what I'm saying? Like his company has gone buck wild. Yeah, Lisa Su is his relative. It's
good for him. I was talking to somebody and they were saying, oh, who are you rooting for? Maybe it was the Super Bowl or something like that. And they're like, oh, I don't want to see so-and-so win again. And I'm like, there's something happened to me back in the Tom Brady days when he was, you know, he was, everybody hated him. Everybody hated the Patriots because they kept winning and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why is it in society we want to see the winners fall? And I'm like, that's it. I was not a Patriots fan. I literally went out and bought Patriots socks, and I call them my winner socks.
Yeah.
And I just wear them because, and to me, I love winners. I love winners. I want winners to win.
There's one line which I am comfortable drawing about winning, which is, I want people to win because they're excellent. I don't want people to win because they block out other competitors, right?
Agreed.
So as long as they're winning for excellence, we should absolutely be celebrating that. We should be celebrating that.
Yeah.
So like everyone, like I've come to know that like Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant, they were a little crazy. Like Michael Jordan was incredibly mean to his teammates to provoke their excellence. And Kobe Bryant was the same, but also Kobe Bryant, like I've read articles about like Kobe Bryant was on his way to from LA to go to overseas to play for the USA team. And he wanted to do his evening workout. And he got the phone number for a local, I think it was a high school basketball coach of some renown. And he's like, hey, do you have access to a gym? Yeah, this is Kobe Bryant. Do you have access to a gym? Yeah. He's like, hey, I want to do my shooting exercise. And I need to pay someone to shag balls for me and let me into the gym. He's like, I'll give you $5,000 for if you come do that for me. And it's like, okay. So this coach shows up at the gym, unlocks it. And Kobe goes in there. Kobe shoots for so long that this coach couldn't shag the balls anymore. Like he couldn't lift his arms to throw the ball back to Kobe.
What?
Because it was thousands and thousands of shots.
Wow.
Like this guy is like, this guy failed before Kobe did. Kobe's like, nah, you're good. We can call it for the night. But he was gonna, he would have kept going if the guy would have let him.
Wow.
So I was like, do we resent that? I'm like, I mean, it's impressive. That's excellence. That's impressive. And, you know what I mean?
And in a lot of ways, Steph Curry does the same thing. So did Michael Jordan. So did Tom Brady. These people are singularly.
Like, we don't want to make a hero of those guys. They have secret bad parts of their life. I'm like, we're not lionizing the bad parts of their lives. We're lionizing the parts of their lives that are demonstrated to be excellent. Like, you know what I mean?
It's so frustrating to me because I look at people and I'm like, wait a minute, these people have made it to the top. Why is it that there's an entire structure to tear them down? I remember, did you ever read the Stephen Covey book,
Seven Habits? I
actually haven't read
that, but I want to hear you. Yeah, I read Seven Habits.
Okay, so you remember he talks about, I think the story goes something like he moved to Hawaii and he went out with some friends and they were going to collect crabs and they had a steel bucket and they would throw the crabs in the bucket.
Yeah.
And he went over to the bucket, put some of the crabs in, and he watches them crawl up the side. They're literally crawling up the side to a point where they would come out. And he says, hey, we need to put a top on this thing because the crabs are going to get out. And his friends said they never get out. So he sat there and watched them. And as they would get up, and just as one of these crabs would get the claw over the top and it looks like they were going to escape, another crab would reach up with their claw and pull them back down. I'm like, what is it about society that we have to do that? What is it about our current culture that says, if you're at the top, we want you to fail. Well, we want you to fall. We want you to be bad. We want you to step in it.
Look, like human envy is not new. So human beings, they can envy people and they can want to take people down a notch. That's a thing. That's a thing that I think is probably built in to the human character. But as a culture, we can decide whether or not we are going to service that or not. And as I understand it, in the early 1900s of America, when things could have were like not great, like that a lot of the books and a lot of the television were about people picking themselves up out of bad circumstances and doing great things and celebrating that. And that's where I'd like to go as a culture. Like, you can't spite like the sour faced person who's going to be sad about somebody else's success. That's going to exist. But as a culture, we don't have to accept it. As a general culture, we should be like, yeah, I'm not watching that movie. I'm watching this movie. That's part of the reason that I take exception to, and frankly don't participate in, a lot of these Netflix documentaries. Like, the Netflix documentaries are always like, this person said they were going to cure diabetes, but what they did instead is bought a fancy car and now they're in jail. And I'm like, I don't want to watch that documentary.
Yeah, it's not
like,
fun.
I can think of ways that people are terrible all by myself. Yeah. Like, but if somebody built something cool, I want to see it. I want to know about it. You know what I mean? Like, show me that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a phenomenon that I don't really, you know, I was watching the some excerpts of the State of the Union address, which was very weird from a political watcher. It was a very strange speech. But one of the weirdest things to me was it was a full display of, we're going to make people pay, quote, their fair share. And it was this tax and spend idea. And I'm like, I don't understand why or how anyone can have the mentality that someone has too much, so we need to take it away from them. It doesn't make sense to
me. So my theory on that is, we have something in America that everyone doesn't have, which is interesting. We love an underdog story of a plucky upstart.
Agreed.
But did you know that not every culture loves that?
No.
So this is wild. This is actually something I personally observed.
That was just human nature.
No, it's not human nature. It's American nature. And I think it's because we are the product of a plucky upstart revolution, and that has permeated our culture. But in China, did you know that in China, Star Wars doesn't land the same way? They're like, I don't understand. Like, the Empire isn't obviously a villainous group. And the plucky upstarts aren't obviously heroic in China.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't that wild? Because that's a culture that overtly is like, no, together we're building a great nation that will rule the earth.
Is that why we have such muddled good and evil ideas in movies now? Because not everybody sees them the same?
Yes. It's because it's two parts. Because because Hollywood's been internationalized, so people of these different cultural backgrounds are influencing the stories. That's one. Number two, even if they aren't, people that are making the stories for export are trying to make them appeal to everyone across the world. And when you abandon that, you get something that lands super hard in one culture. So that's why Top Gun landed super hard in the USA and was banned in China.
I'm actually from a little flummoxed because it approaches a worldview problem for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, so here's my theory, though. So we love underdogs. And Marxists have tried to take over America for the last 100 years. And those two things have met. So because we love underdogs, Marxists are now levering our love of underdogs to say that anybody in a position of power is necessarily evil.
Yeah.
And so now, and that
the oppressed and the oppressor.
And that's an easy hop to be like, yeah, I love the plucky underdogs, to being like,
yeah,
oh, anyone that's strongest is the worst.
Right.
And that's the most obvious being right now with Hamas.
Palestine. Like, yeah.
Hamas is the plucky underdogs here. And guess what? They're the worst. Like, they are terrorists who murdered and raped
people.
They're evil. They're performing evil. They're like, no, but not all Palestinians are evil. I'm like, fine, I accept that. I even have friends that would fall in that category. But that doesn't change the fact that October 7th was evil, period. And that is not an underdog that we support. That's an underdog that we kill or put in jail. Like that's that.
I have a friend of mine that I actually contacted. I wanted to get their take on Palestine. He's from Gaza. His family's from Gaza. He has over 100 of his, you know, extended family members that have been killed in this current conflict.
That's awful.
The current one. I'm not talking about like ongoing current over, you know, 10 years. I'm talking about like one started October 7th.
That's really sad.
See, over 100. His son was in my class, and we were kind of talking about it. And he got a little bit. He had a different take. He was very defensive of the whole thing. And I'm like, okay, I need to call his dad. I need to make sure that I'm on task here.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So I talked to him, and he said, the best thing that could possibly happen for my people, right? He considers himself an American. He was born and raised here. I think it was his father or grandfather that came over from Gaza. Like literally in the Gaza Strip, that's where he's from.
Yeah, okay.
And he says, my people, quote unquote, in air quotes, because he says he considers himself American. But from where I come from, my progenitors, he goes, all that they have done for themselves is make them professional refugees.
Yeah.
And it's one group taking advantage of them and then the next group. And he said, the only hope my people have is for Israel to root out Hamas from the root.
Okay.
And I'm like, I thought that was a really, really hard take on it, especially since he has family members there.
Yeah.
And he says, but that's the only hope we have. He says, we have to go through this pain. Is it terrible that my family members are over there, don't have food and water, et cetera, and so forth? Yes. But do I blame that on someone else? No. I blame that on one group, and that is Hamas, which has been the current oppressor. They're the oppressor. Hamas, the organization, is the oppressor of Palestinians.
Yeah,
well, I thought that was an interesting take, because this oppressor versus oppressed thing is a very weird worldview.
It's a really daft worldview.
Yeah, I don't like it.
It's a really daft worldview.
I don't like it.
Like, what do you mean it's daft? I'm like, I don't believe that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I believe that power usually corrupts and absolute power usually corrupts absolutely. Yeah. Usually corrupts.
I would even.
I believe
say
that
can.
Power is dangerous, but that doesn't mean that the powerless are that just. I'm sorry. I'm not even saying it articulately, because I guess I don't think it has to be said articulately. Like, you just because you're losing doesn't mean you're right.
And the other weird thing to me is I don't understand why anyone would want to, like, if the idea of a plucky upstart, right? I'm the plucky upstart. I'm not the billionaire. I'm not, you know, Hong. I'm not Musk. I'm not all these other people, right? And so my question is like, oh, so I'm victimized by them? So that's the mentality I'm supposed to take, and so therefore I need to punish them? No, I want to emulate the good things that they did and successfully to move forward. That's the way I look at life. And it's so frustrating to me that I would even talk to a young person that would think for some reason they are oppressed, and therefore must be cared for by someone else.
Or that, Or that because someone is good at something and I admire that, that I'm also then a total fanboy that will do anything that they say. I'm like, that's not right. Like, there's like 100 things I would take zero advice from Elon Musk on.
Yeah.
But there's 100 things I would definitely take Elon Musk's advice on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I had there's 100 things I have that I could teach Elon Musk. And in fact, you and I have a mutual friend who is in his inner circle who is for sure doing that.
Right.
Right? Who is a good dude and a family man and has a lot to teach Elon Musk. But that doesn't mean Elon Musk is disqualified from teaching me about manufacturing,
right,
or about solving engineering problems,
right,
or about persistence, or about like short selling.
The dude's
or
Thomas
about
Edison, Nikola Tesla, and Henry Ford wrapped in one dude.
It's unreal, dude. Like this is generation. Everyone's like, oh, he's the new Steve Jobs. I'm like, no. He has run way past Steve Jobs. Now, he started out being like, oh, I hope he's the new Steve Jobs back when it was just Tesla.
Right.
But dude, that dude's not, that was Tesla. He's landing rockets. He's got space internet going and brain implants and tunneling. Like, dude is killing it.
Yeah.
He has run way past Steve Jobs.
Yeah. It will be interesting to see how, I guess we'll be dead by the time history treats him. But I bet
because the historians are all clowns these days. I bet history treats him badly, and they do it whilst driving around in one of his cars and flying one of his spaceships. I suspect that it won't be measured in the history books. It'll be measured in the activities. I bet like 2/3 of the activities that we do in 100 years have been directly touched by Elon Musk.
Well, I agree with you, but back to the point is that I don't understand the worldview about the oppressed and the oppressor. I don't understand the idea of
I think you're wrong. I think you understand it perfectly. You just hard disagree.
Okay, I'll take that. But I look at the groups that we're constantly forcing into the victim group, right? We're like, hey, black people, you've got to have reparations for anything to be even again. I'm like, no, that is not the way. How did that happen for the Indians? It didn't really help much.
Yeah.
Right? They're still stuck in there, And the truth is, I watched a video the other day. I think it was Candace Owens. She showed a video of Harlem in the 40s. And it was still a black neighborhood there.
Yeah.
But it was like they were dressed to the nines.
Yeah.
Men and women walking up and down, black men and women walking up and down the streets of Harlem. It did not look like the Harlem of today. It did not look like you were going to get mugged. It didn't look, there were white people with them. Everybody was happy. They were smiling. This was back when the family was intact in those neighborhoods. And sure, it was still a minority neighborhood, but they do not look. And then you juxtapose that to that same intersection that you see today, and it is like it is daunting, it is terrifying what we have gone from. And so you keep saying it's all about the culture war. I agree with you,
yeah.
But it's the pushback is happening.
Yeah.
I think you're right. We are coming back.
I'm starting to feel like the pendulum's like it's coming back now. Like I did a spiel about the pendulum being back last year as well. But that's true though.
Yeah.
It can be not all the way back and still be headed back.
It could be all the way north and still heading south.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that it's going slow, but like I think people are disregarding nonsense news more. I think people are chilling out more. I think people are having hope more. And I think that people are embracing this idea of reason and accountability more. And all the way back, baby.
I have a question for you about the nonsense news, because
sure.
I want to know if you think this way. You think people are not paying attention to nonsense news? In other words, I don't want to call far left or far right, whatever. But I don't believe that there's such thing as neutral news. It's just not possible. We talked about this in the AI discussion where when you eliminate evil and you eliminate good, then how do you measure it, right? You can't measure. The bias is just innate. It's just part of it.
Okay.
So the question is there a section of the alphabet soup news, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, Fox, MSNBC, blah, blah, right? Is there a fraction of that that is freaking out over their loss of the American people's attention. Like, they are looking so hard for their attention.
The corporate leadership of those news organizations are fully aware that what a money loser it has become to work in news. Like, let me give you an example. I went to visit Good Morning America for a product that I had a few years back, and I got a tour from a guy who told me about what it used to be like in news. Now, this is the time where, like, it was a much slimmed down organization. It was running much, much leaner than it used to. And he's like, yeah, I worked with this guy who's worked here for 30 years. And he told me what it used to be like. He's like, one time they went to do this news package in overseas, and they flew everybody over on a private plane, and they forgot one of their important pieces of equipment. And they just rented another plane and put the one piece of equipment on it and flew it over. And they did that because they were so dumb flush with money, because all the advertising money flowed through the news, all of it, that they could, and it didn't matter. And all they cared about was being the number one respected news organization. Now they're cut down to bare bones, and they're still cutting. There's just another recent purge at CNN, and there's going to be another one coming up. So the corporate parents of those people are freaking out in the sense that they know that this business model is failing. Yes. News people themselves, man, I don't know what to say about those guys. They just vacillate between being complete airheads, and like, I don't know what to say about the news people themselves. I don't know them well enough. But when I hear people talk, but that do know, like, give spiels about it, they're just not that bright. And they just think that the world owes them stuff, and they write that that's what's represented in their writing and their broadcasting.
Interesting.
All right, friends, this has been another episode of the WayStation Podcast, your source for life hacks, social commentary, and amazing stories.
I'm William.
I'm Randy.
Have a good day.